Hello. Over the past few days, Al Jazeera has been at the forefront of breaking news of the biggest leak of military secrets ever. We were the first television network to broadcast details of the WikiLeaks material, 391,000 classified documents. Now, we're ready to bring you part two of our findings from the secret Iraq files. Now, these secret documents, sourced through WikiLeaks, cover 6 years of war. And while they deal mainly with day-to-day events, they also allow us to paint a big picture. In this program, we'll be getting an insight into the rise of Al-Qaeda, who pays for it, and how it gets its money. We'll be finding out what the Americans really think about Iraq's Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki. We'll reveal details about Iran's secret war inside Iraq and America's massive use of air power. Is it as precise as they claim? Al-Qaeda in Iraq has grown from almost nothing into one of the deadliest threats to Iraqi civilians and coalition soldiers alike. More than 12,500 of these secret files relate to the group's activities. And our analysis has allowed us to compile a graph that gives a fairly clear picture of the past 6 years. And you can see that in 2004, Al-Qaeda barely existed. Their attacks throughout 2005 and 2006 were minimal, but it's here they began to escalate. And it was the American troop surge in 2007 that really sees the attacks beginning to take off. They peaked at more than 8,000 in 2008. They've decreased since then, but the group is still very active. And what is clear is that the war created Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, these secret files have also told us where Al-Qaeda training camps were to be found, and it's not just inside Iraq, but in Syria as well. The coalition claims that Syria's military has been helping to train Al-Qaeda fighters. In one cable, for instance, there is evidence of an Al-Qaeda camp being supervised by a senior Syrian military officer. Now, one question that has often also been asked during the war is, how has Al-Qaeda been funding itself? Now, these secret files do give some precise details, including foreign financiers, extortion, kidnappings and bank robberies, and simple theft. Let's give you some examples. One report claims that rogue policemen were planning to lend an Al-Qaeda cell police uniforms and police cars. It reveals the cell was plotting to rob a bank of 250 million Iraqi dinars. In another exchange, a bus owner who once helped fund Al-Qaeda is told he must pay $20,000 or, quote, suffer the consequences. His bus was blown up when he refused to pay. Another file discusses Al-Qaeda's kidnapping of Christians for ransom money. The Archbishop of Mosul was so valuable that he was taken twice. One cable reads, quote, they will likely demand a large ransom for his release. Last time the Archbishop was kidnapped, the terrorists received $200,000 for a ransom. This time, they will likely demand more. But on that second occasion, the Archbishop was murdered. Now, time after time, ordinary Iraqis are also shown helping fund Al-Qaeda. The Baghdad shopkeeper who collected his money from his customers to buy a suicide vest. Another official who steals from his own council to fund the group. And the propane seller who siphons off gas and funds to help Al-Qaeda. Well, Fawaz Jurgis is a professor of Middle East politics and international relations at the London School of Economics and joins us now. Thank you for being with us. Even some top officials of the Pentagon have admitted that Al-Qaeda and its membership is very much a function of what's been going on in Iraq, and the more action there is, the more members come to join it. But is that the same thing as suggesting, as some have done, that leaving Iraq by the coalition troops will lead to a dissipation of Al-Qaeda?
Well, as you know, Al-Qaeda is still in Iraq, but it's a shadow of its former self. Of course, Al-Qaeda has the capability to carry out multiple deadly lethal attacks, as it has done so in the last few months. But let's remember, at the height of its power in 2007, Al-Qaeda's numbers were in the thousands. Now Al-Qaeda is down to 100. The turning point, the watershed, was in 2007, when Iraqi Sunni public opinion turned against Al-Qaeda. And that's why Al-Qaeda now is a shadow of its former self, because it's lost its shelter. And that shelter was a critical segment of Sunni Iraqi public opinion.
How do these documents and what you have analyzed from the past in Iraq actually inform us any more as to what the U.S. policy has been and what the U.S. policy should be?
2 points. The documents show very clearly that between 2003 and 2004, Al-Qaeda hardly existed in Iraq. It was a very small little faction. By 2007, Al-Qaeda numbered almost 8,000 fighters. In 2007, Al-Qaeda carried out almost 8,000 attacks inside Iraq. In fact, if it was not for the bloody mistakes perpetrated by Al-Qaeda against Iraqi civilians, the reason why Sunni public opinion turned against Al-Qaeda because of its indiscriminate bombings against thousands of civilians, because of its extremist methods, because of disrespect for tribal traditions. The big point here is that really the U.S. Army did not defeat Al-Qaeda in Iraq as the conventional wisdom would have it. What really defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq was Sunni public opinion turning against Al-Qaeda by 2007. That's why 2007 was a very critical point.
And we
the big lesson to learn is the following.
Go ahead.
Please. The big lesson to learn is the following. In fact, Al-Qaeda is a parasite that feeds on social instability and political turmoil. And the deadlock, the political deadlock in Iraq today, could provide Al-Qaeda with ammunition, could really be the oxygen that allows Al-Qaeda to survive and revive, even though Al-Qaeda now is down to almost 100 fighters.
As you've pointed out, and as we have displayed through these documents and through our reporting, it was the situation amongst the ordinary people that was the real shock and the real eye-opener that these WikiLeaks papers have provided. But I'm not quite sure what you're trying to suggest the future is going to hold here. Are you suggesting that the American line, that they still need to fight Al-Qaeda, is mistaken or correct?
No, I think Al-Qaeda in Iraq is an Iraqi problem. What I'm trying to suggest is that you cannot understand the rise and decline of Al-Qaeda in Iraq without understanding the escalation of hostilities and the intensification of hostilities. And as long as there is political instability, I mean, remember, 7 months after the elections, there's still no current government in Iraq. The Sunni Arab community, which initially provided shelter to Al-Qaeda, is very dissatisfied now. And this is why, unless there is political solution, unless there is a national unity government, there is a chance, a good chance, that Al-Qaeda could revive in Iraq.
Now, if you've just joined us, this is an Al Jazeera News special on the secret Iraq war files. Now, while publicly the Americans have been broadly supportive of Iraq's prime minister, in private they have at times been scathing about Nouri al-Maliki's behavior and his motives. In these documents there are claims that he abused his power not only for his own political gain, but also to advance the Shia cause at the expense of Sunnis.
Iraq's current Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, is mentioned often in the secret files and sometimes not in glowing terms. In October 2006, Iraqi troops detained 17 suspicious men dressed in Iraqi army uniforms. Their captain claimed they were a special forces unit on an arrest mission.
Detainees claimed to be Iraqi special forces working for the Prime Minister's office. Iraqi Army HQ vouching for legitimacy of mission, and the mission was directed by PM Maliki.
The Americans tried to interview the men, but they were whisked away. A number of reports refer to Maliki using special forces to carry out detentions on his direct orders.
They are part of the Prime Minister of Iraq's office. They're not part of the command structure of the military. That's not a matter. And they have been used to advance certain goals and objectives that the Prime Minister thinks are desirable. And they may very well have been used to advance party and political objectives that are not necessarily linked to the overall security situation.
In June 2009, according to the files, Maliki ordered the arrest of 5 senior Sunni policemen, all ex-Baathists. A U.S. intelligence officer expressed concern.
It could demonstrate that PM Maliki, who is rumored to be using his power to forcefully advance Shia interests in Iraq, is cracking down on Sunnis who he perceives as a threat. fact that the PM ordered the arrest makes it that much more suspicious.
Colonel al-Shikli is one senior Sunni figure who has fled Iraq in recent months after political pressure.
They wanted to freeze me out. Someone came to me, and I was told word for word that I must either leave Iraq or I would have an ugly end. Those people are still there, and indeed, I had to leave Iraq.
Although Maliki is a Shia, the secret files show the Prime Minister is not popular among Shia militias close to Iran, such as the Mahdi Army. Numerous assassination attempts are made on Maliki's life, according to the files.
As of early October 2006, alleged Jaish al-Mahdi death squad leader in Baghdad claimed to have been tasked by authority of a fatwa to organize the public assassination of Iraqi Prime Minister.
Maliki's main political rival, Ayad Alawi, also faced an alleged assassination plot. Coalition intelligence reports a car bomb.
Hyundai Accent was allegedly brought into Iraq from Iran for ultimate use against former Iraqi Prime Minister Ayad Alawi.
There's also evidence of Maliki flexing his political muscle. In May 2009, Nineveh's governor, involved in a power struggle with the Kurds, announced his intention to visit a contested area.
PM Maliki ordered the Nineveh Operations Center not to assist in securing provincial governor's movement. Iraqi police secured his movement anyway.
Despite the Kurds' warning they would shoot the governor if he passed their checkpoints, the secret cable shows Maliki ordered the police not to assist him.
Well, Ghassan Atiyah is the founder and executive director of the Iraq Foundation for Development and Democracy and joins us now. Mr. Atiyah, thank you for being with us. How damaging do you think these WikiLeaks files will be to Mr. al-Maliki?
The files, as a matter of fact, they didn't bring anything new, which the Iraqi didn't know about it. But what they guessed this, now it has been confirmed by an American source. And this will add to it more importance to the Iraqis. However, the Iraqi politician will use this against each other. And then Maliki, no doubt, suffered a blow by these reports. However, he took the action of establishing a new committee chaired by the Minister of Justice to look into this.
I was going to bring that up, actually. Do you think this committee will actually do anything of note?
As a matter of fact, I was saying, anything referred to a committee in Iraq is tantamount to postponement, or rather ever postponement. No committee in Iraq has come up with any conclusion during the last 7 years. So in this sense, what is really the new development in Iraq is not the WikiLeaks, but actually the ruling of the Supreme Court that the parliament should be convened within 2 weeks. If this will take place, this means that Maliki is preparing himself to force a vote, and if he forces a vote, this will create a big schism in the Iraqi body politics. And if the Iraqiist, or basically the Sunni constituencies, feel that they will sabotage or whatever it is, then we will have a big division in the Iraqi politics. They will forget the American or WikiLeaks, and they will think that now they are going to be robbed the rare, actual, fair chance of being partner in the government. So the next 2 weeks are very decisive, and any step taken in by the Maliki to force an election of a head of parliament and subsequently the president and then the prime minister, this will be the big problem in Iraq now more than any other else.
The situation for Mr. al-Maliki individually is right now focused on parliament and his relationship with other politicians. What about the view of the public? Do you think the public has paid much attention, and do you think that will make any difference to the broader political situation?
I would be very candid with you. I've been in Iraq, I know it. Nothing in this report is not known to the simple Iraqis. I know Iraqis who are in prison, they will tell me, we rather be in American jail rather than Iraqi jail. My office is only 300 yards from the Ministry of Interior, where they had their private cells in 1905, and they were torturing there. That's during a Ja'fari government. The American, all they could do, that asked them to change the guard there and the management there. But no one has been punished, no one has been reprimanded for what he has done then. Well, and till now, we don't have any report which show that any action was taken against any individual who practiced torture on Iraqis.
Well, what you have just said and what the WikiLeaks files have confirmed is that so much of this violence has been Iraqi on Iraqi violence. Is there a potential that we will return to the dark days of 2006, 2007, should the al-Maliki government fall and should the political situation descend once again into a fraction?
As I say, it would not be due to the WikiLeaks reports, but rather for convening of the parliament. If he will, al-Maliki, decide to bulldoze the forming of the new government by having 163 members in the parliament and they vote for a new head of parliament, then this process will put on the next step will be choosing a prime minister, president, and then the prime minister. If this process will take place at the same time the al-Iraqiyya feels that it has been marginalized or ignored, the question remains is in the hand of the Kurdish bloc. What the Kurdish bloc will do?
Okay.
Will they try to hold things or will they try to will take side? This is a very crucial 2 weeks coming in the near future.
Well, under Saddam Hussein, Iraq and Iran were deadly enemies. But 7 years on, Iran is perhaps the greatest beneficiary of the coalition's invasion. Hundreds of these files detail Iran's involvement in Iraq. And there are allegations that its intelligence agents directed attacks against Americans and Sunnis alike, and that Iran's Revolutionary Guard supplied arms to Shia fighters.
Iran's long border with Iraq is the perfect place for weapons smugglers. Old munitions from the Iran-Iraq war make up much of the material, but also in the files are secret reports of large-scale weapons shipments allegedly provided directly to militias by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps personnel smuggled ammunition, explosives and rockets from Iran. They're possibly surface-to-air missiles.
The evidence is overwhelming. From weapon caches that carry Revolutionary Guard insignia to IEDs to the bombs and the mortar shells and so on. I mean, the flow of arms from Iran into Iraq to support these groups was continuous and practically unceasing.
Another detailed British intelligence file reports a source that claims Iranian Revolutionary Guards were directing assassinations in Basra. The source alleged that five Shia militias in the city, including the Badr Brigade and Fadila, regularly received Iranian orders, which they then passed to assassination teams working within Basra's police service.
The Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps directs Iranian-sponsored assassinations in Basra. The instructions include the target's biographical data and the method of assassination.
According to the secret files, numerous Iranian intelligence agents have been conducting attacks inside Iraq. One Iranian spy was allegedly sent to assassinate controversial Sunni politician Dr. Adnan al-Dulaimi in 2005. The killer went to great lengths to hide his Iranian origins.
X will travel into Iraq with an Iraqi passport with the notation that he is mute. Source comment. The reason for this notation is that X speaks broken Arabic and would easily be detected as an Iranian.
The Mahdi army and other Shia militia were finally confronted by U.S. and Iraqi forces in the spring of 2008. The secret files show references to Iranian agents tripled over this period as the militia struggled unsuccessfully to stem the attacks. Yet Iran's influence still remains strong.
The Iranians at the moment are in a position to greatly influence what's going on in Iraq. I've had one of their key adversaries in the region, Saddam Hussein, removed, and a series of their allies placed in power. Yes, so in this kind of ghoulish and horrible league table of winners, the Iranians are certainly at the top, and the British and the United States are certainly at the bottom.
Now, you'll already have seen the figures on Iraqi deaths caused by U.S. airstrikes. The documents record 3,800 killings over the past 6 years, but only 103 of those were marked down as civilians. Part of the problem is that the U.S. only records the bodies that it recovers, and often airstrikes by their very nature are carried out where there are no ground forces operating. It's another fact from the files that indicates that a much, much higher civilian death toll is likely.
Fallujah, September 9th, 2004. Early one morning, an American plane dropped two 500-pound bombs onto an objective in the north of the city, as a secret cable reports.
F-15 dropped two GBU-12s on the objective. Section reported good hits on target. Battlefield damage assessment unknown.
No casualties were recorded. The U.S. military confirmed a strike on al-Qaeda militants and stated categorically that no other individuals were present. But news soon emerged of the deaths of at least eight people, including four children and two women.
A family died in this house. No one was saved. Children and women were killed.
That evening, the U.S. issued a revised statement, acknowledging that
an unknown number of Iraqi civilians were unfortunately amongst those killed and wounded in the strike.
This discrepancy is reflected across a year of combat in Fallujah. The U.S. data records no civilian casualties from air attacks in the city in 2004. Iraq Body Count, one of the most credible sources on casualty numbers, says hundreds of civilians were killed in Fallujah that year, many by airstrikes.
We know that there were at least 600 civilians killed as a result of the attacks on Fallujah. None of the airstrikes, none of the ground attacks came on their own. There was a combination of weapons. Airstrikes were extremely important. And one of the things that we've discovered in our research is that airstrikes, when they kill civilians, tend to kill a large number of civilians.
In the rare cases where we do have reports of ground forces searching for casualties after an air attack, the figures can tell a very different story. Following U.S. airstrikes on Husseiba in 2005, Iraqi troops recovered civilian bodies from three sites.
All casualties were recovered from areas attacked by coalition aircraft. It was not known that civilians were present on targets during time of close air support engagement.
It was left to the Iraqis themselves to retrieve the dead.
25 killed, 12 children, 3 males, 10 females.
The commander in charge in Iraq until 2008, General David Petraeus, made clear in his manual on counterinsurgency that
an airstrike can cause collateral damage that turns people against the host nation government and provides insurgents with a major propaganda victory.
About 4 Humvees out along this...
You're clear.
All right, firing.
What state line? Let me know when you have it.
Won't you? Light them all up.
When General Petraeus shifted U.S. strategy to counter insurgency in early 2007, the secret files show that against his own advice, the use of air power actually increased. U.S. Air Force figures confirm that in 2006, the coalition was dropping around 4 bombs a week in Iraq. By 2007, that figure had risen to 4 a day. The last 18 months of the data does show a big decline in air power use. Yet, despite the pullout of U.S. ground troops, unmanned drone use in Iraq is expected to increase in the months ahead. The same Predator and Reaper drones being used in Afghanistan and Pakistan to such deadly effect.
Well, Marwan Bishara is Al Jazeera's senior strategic analyst. Marwan, the Pentagon has again, similarly to the Afghan leak, accused the media of endangering troops and national security. Have we done so, or is it more in the public interest that we should be having programs like this?
You know, it was that very same justification of national security that took America to this disastrous war in the first place. And it was the justification of national security that allowed the United States for this miserable conduct of the war over the last 6 years that led to the, as we've seen from the leaks, to the casualties of in the hundreds of thousands. The fact that there isn't that public discussion in the United States and abroad onto those sorts of questions allows them to go unchecked and hence allows the kinds of war crime that we've seen before. In fact, as they do have the right, in fact, the responsibility to protect their people, we have the responsibility to our viewers, to the public, and not just in the United States. Because as an international news organization, if we're going to go about respecting every country's own calculation of its own national security, we will probably never, ever cover any news. So we do have a responsibility, in fact, a right, indeed, in times of war, Timur, to cover those sorts of news like never before.
Now, you mentioned public discussion, and surely this war, more than anything, has proven the value and the need for public discussion. But how much are we going to get in this case? Nick Clegg, Britain's Deputy Prime Minister, has suggested that maybe he would support an inquiry. Is he likely to when push comes to shove?
You know, the British have been far more forthcoming than the Americans on this, Timur. There's the Chilcot inquiry already underway since 2009, looking into British role into the war in Iraq. So I think those sorts of positions from responsible British politicians is actually very interesting. And the fact that they are the biggest coalition partner in Iraq, as they are in Afghanistan, of course, they should be listened to in Washington. Now, unfortunately, we have something like a special tribunal to the assassination of Rafiq al-Hariri in Lebanon. And maybe this is important and interesting. I'm not putting any judgments on that. But for one prime minister, we have a special international tribunal sanctioned by the United Nations. But for the killing of over 150,000, there isn't even yet any inquiry. The United States is not even looking into it. That's really terrible.
And not only that, you have a lot of people who are beginning to fear that the U.S. is trying to engineer a similar chain of events in order to go into Iran. Do you think that is likely? And do you think this has changed any possibility of that happening?
If I may, Timur, before we go to Iran, and yes, I agree, this is a threat. This is out there and this is important we need to look at. But what's even more present today is the conduct of the war in Afghanistan. Because it's the same general who led the war in Iraq, General Petraeus, under which his leadership and previous leaderships, just when General Tommy Franks were saying, we don't do body counts, it seems like they were doing body counts. So as we were lied to by various U.S. generals, as it seems today from the leaks, we have an ongoing war in Afghanistan. Just today they're talking about certain victories, and relative victories in Afghanistan. Do we then start posing the question that just as they concealed evidence from us, just as they concealed war crimes from us, apparently, in Iraq, they're doing the same in Afghanistan? Hence, once again, Timur, it is our responsibility to make sure that there's enough public discussion on these affairs so that we won't have the same thing repeated in Afghanistan.
All right, Marwan, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
And so we come to the end of this, our second news special on the secret Iraq files. I'm Taimur Nabili. Thanks for watching. Goodbye.